Here's something you may or may not know. 40% of total U.S. energy consumption comes from residential and commercial buildings. 40%. Larry Mueller here again. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. And pleased to have back Virge Temme with us. She is an architect who has specialized in sustainable design for over 20 years. She designed some of the most energy-efficient homes in Wisconsin, or you're going to find anywhere else. She was recognized by Build International magazine as one of the leaders in green architecture in the Midwest U.S., recently won the Women in Sustainability Award given out by the U.S. Green Building Council. And really pleased to have her back. We had lots of callers last time she was on with lots of questions. And you may have some questions about energy-efficient homes. I hope you'll join in. What have you done to make your home more efficient? But let's talk with her. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can post questions on our Facebook page. Also, again, call us at 1-800-642-1234. Email address, by the way, is ideas@wpr.org. Virge Temme, welcome back.
Hi, Larry. Nice to be back.
Happy
Thanksgiving and happy anniversary to WPR.
Well, thank you so much. And you have just won a very prestigious award.
I did, and it was, I have to say, it was an amazing surprise, because historically the award has gone out to women who are CEOs of major industries, or they're sustainability directors of major industries, you know, Google and Coca-Cola and, you know, places like that. And I thought, I'm just a little solo architect up here in Door County, Wisconsin, and I think that what they wanted to point out was the fact that even solo voices can make a big difference.
Yeah.
And so we all have to, even if we feel like we're standing out there in the middle of a desert on our own, we all have to do what we can.
Well, I tell you, I just read Jim Lundstrom's piece on you. And I think the title was something like Architect Virge Temme Building Sage Home in Sturgeon Bay, and I thought, what a fascinating story. And this has come up since the last time we've spoken. I think you started Sage Homes. Tell us about that part of your business.
Well, I started Sage Homes for two different reasons. One was to focus exclusively on energy efficient homes, you know, and near net zero energy homes. And the other was to bring in more women into the construction industry, and we just don't have female general contractors. And so that was the other part of this equation. But let me tell you about SAGE. S-A-G-E is an acronym that stands for Small, Affordable, Green, and Expandable. So all of these homes, and I'm designing a series of these homes, and we've done the first prototype. It's, you know, the homeowners are living in it and experiencing it now. But all these homes are going to be right at about 1,000 square feet, two bedrooms, two baths, living room, kitchen, dining room. They're affordable. I designed them specifically so they could be afforded by the average Wisconsin household income, which is $52,000.
Yeah.
And they're green because they're all near net zero energy. They're all extremely water efficient. They will all have either active or passive solar components to them. And they're expandable. And this is key, because too many people have to move out of their homes because their family gets bigger. Their needs change. Maybe they have to have a health care provider. You know, as they age, they want someone to live in the home with them, and they don't have the room for it. So all of these homes are pre-designed like they did in the good old days, with the expectation that at some point the house may grow. And so all the plumbing is installed, so we can expand as much as 40 feet out. All the electrical is roughed in for future expansion. And this is actually something I learned from, I did my master's thesis on family housing from 1939 through 63. And this is the way they designed the Levittown houses. And many of your listeners, I'm sure, are familiar with what the Levittown project was.
Yeah.
I don't know if you are, Larry.
But talk about it. I'm sure there are people who aren't.
Okay. So the Levittown project was the largest single-family housing development in the history of the United States. And it was started in response to all the people coming back from World War II. It was the biggest housing shortage that we've ever had. And so they were putting up 10 houses a day in Levittown, New York, to respond to this demand. And they knew that the people that were coming back from the service weren't going to have a huge amount of money. They were going to have a decent income, but nothing lavish. And so they designed these little Cape Cod houses, but they designed them so they could be expanded upward or outward as the family grew and as their income grew. And it's very interesting because in the Levittown houses, and, you know, researchers have kept track of this development and how people responded to it, there are still all these, 70 years later, many of the original inhabitants of Levittown still live there because they were able to adapt their homes to their changing lifestyles.
Yeah.
So that's what the expandable, the E portion of SAGE is assuming that, you know, you love your neighborhood, you don't want to move out of it, you've got good friends close by, why leave your house? Let's just expand it as you need to.
Well, I think it's a great, great, great approach and a great idea. And a lot of people would be candidates for a SAGE home, I would think.
Well, it's interesting. Since we had the first open house, in fact, the only open house that we've had at this home, before it was quite finished, we had the house open for 1 hour, Larry, and over 130 people showed up during that hour to hear about it and to witness it and to experience and walk through the house. And to me, that indicates the interest and demand that people have about energy-efficient design and smaller homes.
And as I remember from that article, I think the monthly payments for that came for the couple that who purchased your home, your first one, something like $900 a month, which is about what you're going to pay for apartment rent. And
yeah, and actually their house ended up being a little bit less because their the lot that they purchased was only about $10,000, which is a rarity.
Yeah.
But, for the average household that would be buying, a $25,000, $30,000 lot, that is about how much they'd be paying. They're going to be paying that much for, at least in Door County, they're paying that much for rental property or even more.
Yeah.
But the bonus is that then their utility costs, their heating, their electrical, their water, will be so much less than a standard home or an apartment building.
What are we talking about? Just let's say in terms of heat, the versus a conventional home.
Well, this is versus a conventional home. In fact, over the last few years, I put together numbers, and for the purpose of this program, I jotted down kind of a generic home, say 2,000 square feet.
Okay.
Okay, a typical home in Wisconsin is about 2,170 square feet. So let's round it off to 2,000 square feet. And a typical mortgage is, let's say, $400,000.
Okay.
For a home like that, if you took a 20-year mortgage out at current rate of 4.5%, you're looking at paying $2,620 a month, $2,620 a month.
Yeah.
And, I'm sorry, $2,530 a month. To upgrade to double wall construction, better insulation, better windows, you're looking at about $90 a month extra.
Yeah.
Okay, that's it. The difference in utility costs between those two buildings, and these are based on homes that I've actually done and we've been keeping track of. Typical home construction would have been about $180 a month on average for their utilities. These other homes are about $30 a month. So the net savings, as soon as you move into that house, is about $70 a month.
Yeah.
Amazing. And that is something that we really need to educate homeowners, builders, and bankers about, that we can't look at the bottom line for construction.
You have to look at the other things.
It's a false way of looking at things.
Well, lots of people have questions or comments. Rick in Stevens Point has something. Rick, hi.
Good morning. I was wondering if your guest could just comment or explain to the public two things that kind of go hand in hand. The concept of net metering and how it would apply to, say, a cooperative venture among, say, a public entity, a business, and, say, a neighborhood. For instance, if there was a project where you put some solar panels up on a community center and some businesses put up the upfront cash, and could individual homeowners buy into a setup like that?
Well, I know in western Wisconsin there are a number of very successful solar cooperatives. We don't have them so much in the WPS area where I am, and so I'm not all that familiar about them other than, you know, sitting in on classes that were discussing them. But I was talking with Jesse Mikalski at Eldon Electric, who is a solar panel installer out of Green Bay, and talking to him about the possibility of a cooperative in a neighborhood. And he said that you have to register as a commercial energy provider. And I haven't gone through all those steps yet, so I can't really speak to specifics on it. But from what I have gleaned from conversations, it depends on the utility company you have and what their regulations are.
Yeah, that makes sense. That does make sense. Rick, thanks. I want to give Felicia a chance to join us from Milwaukee. Hi, Felicia.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Virg.
Hi.
I was just wondering if you had heard about two people that I think are really inspiring, and I'm planning on reading more about your work. I didn't know about you before. But the first person is Nikolai Usek, and he's building an off-grid, well, not completely off-grid, but a really small, I think it's maybe 6,500 square feet to 1,000, not sure, in Milwaukee. And the website is machthaus.wordpress.com. That's MACHTHAUS. Machthaus.
M-A-C-H-
and then the second person.
I'm sorry, can you repeat that? MAC?
Oh, sure. MACHTHAUS.
Machthaus. Oh, made house. Okay.
And then the second person.
Oh, you know what? We have to take a quick break. The time is getting away from me. Felicia, I hope you can hold on. We'll take a quick look at the news, and then we'll be back with Felicia and our guest, Virg Temme. You stay with us. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about energy-efficient building with our guest today, Virg Temme of Virg Temme Architecture and Sage Homes. She designs some of the most energy-efficient homes you are going to find, recently recognized by Build International magazine as one of the leaders in green architecture in the Midwest United States, and recently won the Women in Sustainability Award given by the U.S. Green Building Council. Questions for her, give a call at 800-642-1234, email at ideas@wpr.org, or post on our Facebook page. And Virg, Felicia from Milwaukee was on with a comment about some energy-efficient designers, and I believe one of the firms that she mentioned has something called, was named Machthaus, is that correct? Felicia, are you there?
Machthaus, and actually while we were on break, I looked it up, and what he discusses, it's a blog site about this little home that's roughly 516 square feet, and it brings up some things that I wanted to talk with your listeners about, too, is about in order for a building to be truly sustainable, Ideally, you want it close to existing infrastructure so you don't have to get in your car and drive everywhere, which is, and these are some points that he has demonstrated in the development of the Mocked House, which is actually an infill property in Milwaukee. He's also harvesting his rainwater for reuse. Right now in Wisconsin, you can use your rainwater to water your gardens. If you put in an ultraviolet filter, one ultraviolet filter, you can also use your rainwater to wash your clothes, to flush your toilets. And then a double UV filter will enable you to have it as potable water as well. But the third element is also the solar orientation. And this is why it's key that homeowners educate themselves about all the various components of sustainable design, but also work with someone who actually understands it.
Yeah, absolutely. Felicia, you had one other you wanted to mention.
Yeah, I mean, I just thought Mocked House was great because it was a smaller house, kind of like Sage's, although it sounds like the Sage is a little bit bigger than Mocked House. But the second person I wanted to mention is Lou Host-Jablonski, and mm-hmm. there's a website that he's a part of, or an organization he's a part of, designcoalition.org, and he works with straw clay, which is, you know, a totally different approach, you know, using the natural clay and the straw mixed together. And I thought it was really interesting because he seemed to be able to get a super high R value, even with just a 12-inch thick wall, depending on how they manipulated the ratio of clay to straw in the wall. Mm-hmm. And they have a lot of research on their website. So I was wondering if you had ever worked with straw clay and maybe what your thoughts are on that as opposed to other, you know, like pre-or manufactured materials.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've actually been a consultant on two straw bale homes and helped put the mud up on one of them, which was a lot of fun. And straw bale is a pretty interesting way to build. It's incredibly labor intensive, and generally the homeowner participates with the builder in constructing it, which is mm-hmm. why it's not adaptable for a wide population, but it's really beautiful. The R value of the walls, question is whether that 52 R is valid or not, and there's been a lot of debate about that. But no, I think it's a really interesting and viable way to build for a homeowner who wants to undertake a lot of it themselves.
Yeah, there we go. Felicia, thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call.
Yeah, definitely going to start following Mocked House and see what he does.
This is, let's see, Paul in Appleton, I believe, next. Paul, thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Verge.
Hi, Paul.
Just a thought. I mean, I love that you're building smaller homes. You see 6,000 square foot, you know, homes being built that they're called energy efficient, yet they never had a blower door test. They throw on a kilowatt of solar and call themselves green. Whereas I'm into retrofitting, taking, you know, 80% of our housing stock is now 40 years old, and it's so easy to buy recycled foam and just slap it up, seal up the house, and make it wonderfully warm and comfortable, and then throw the solar on after that.
No, I'm in your camp, Paul, on that. If you can save a home, if it's decently constructed, if it has good bones, if it has a good foundation, and if it's adaptable to your use, then by all means, I think it's great to salvage it and save it and reuse it. I want to say 40% of the projects that I undertake are energy retrofits.
Yeah.
You know, there was one home that we finished up last year that it was on a bank foreclosure, and we suspect that it was probably because the energy costs were so high on the house that the people couldn't afford it anymore. And when we opened up the walls to put some insulation in, check, see how much there was almost no insulation in that house.
Oh.
And so we built an extra wall inside the existing wall and created, I think it was like an R28 wall. And their energy costs have been very, very low ever since. It's a very comfortable house now. And so with many homes, you can retrofit both on the interior and on the exterior.
Yeah. Well, my own home is now an Energy Star home, and it was built in 1906.
Oh, good for you.
And it's so a lot of work went, a lot of retrofitting went into making that the home that it is today, for sure. Paul, thanks. We got a younger caller online, I believe. Calvin in Dodgeville.
Yep.
Hi, Calvin.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Sure.
Hi, Calvin.
So I'm just a middle schooler, but I like to design things. And I thought about how it's really windy on lighthouses on the coast.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And if there was some kind of spiral crevice on the side of the lighthouse that went down into a wind-powered turbine, if it could somehow power the light.
Well,
you know, it's interesting, Calvin, that you bring this up, because in Australia, and I think they're also building one, they at least have the designs for it. I believe it's somewhere in Arizona.
Oh.
That it's actually going to be a very, very tall tower. And while it's not wind-powered, what they have done is they have surrounded the entire tower with solar panels that reflect up into the tower, and then it heats the water that's in the tower, which drives the turbines below. So it's kind of the same concept, but using the sun instead of the wind. Yeah. But you know what, Calvin? I think you're going to be a great engineer. I think you should do this.
Thank you. Yeah,
yeah,
that sounds cool.
Yeah, that does sound cool. Thanks, Calvin. Appreciate your call. Calvin's a young caller, which is always great to have youngsters. And there's something that you're doing that I really think is wonderful. You're developing a construction education program for young girls, and I know that's important to you.
It's very important. And, you know, Calvin is a great example of this. He's interested now, and he's someone who could be part of our future. And the thing that troubles me a little bit about the IT departments in schools, and I don't know that they're all like this, but just a one local example is that one of the IT teachers brought his class through one of my lead homes, and I overheard him telling the class, this is how you should be building, not like we're building. And it really hit home with me that right now, we are teaching technology that was used 30, 40, 50 years ago for building these homes.
Yeah.
And we need to be educating our kids now about how to build for the future, because we have to start building net zero energy homes. We simply have to do that, you know, for the sake of energy, for the sake of emissions into our atmosphere, and for the sake of comfort and pocketbook for a lot of people who are going to be living in these homes. So what I am just starting to do right now is we're putting together an advisory panel. This would be teachers and other experts who can help us set up this program. And the vision of it is to take the kids through. And I'm really focusing on girls because I really want to have another female face out on the field to look at once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
But during the school year, then we would take the kids through the entire design process of a home. So they understand why you do certain things, why you model the building's energy as you're designing it, how it is you align the house so it has maximum solar gain, how you pick out a site, what the thought process is for balancing the type of wall, the exterior wall that you put in, or the roof, or how you handle crawl space or basement or slab on grade. So they truly understand why you do things that you do to make an energy efficient home and a sustainable home. And then during the summer, they could build a home. And one of the elements of sustainable building is to use less wood in the construction.
Yeah.
And so I started working with a company, in fact, I've done seven of these over the last many years, of a prefabricated wall panels. So they actually build them in the factory and then truck them out to the site and set them up. It ends up consuming 20% less wood, plus then the house is open to the elements at the most maybe 5 or 6 days instead of a couple of months. So the materials are better protected. And the nice thing about it, too, is that all the heavy lifting, all the real heavy lifting, has already been done. So you don't have to have a lot of muscle mass then to finish the yeah. homes.
And so you're getting this rolling now, started now?
We're in conversations right now. We're hoping, I mean, my hope, at least, is to have this going for the next school year.
Great. Yeah, that sounds wonderful. Well, you'll have to keep us up to date on how that's going along. I want to give Bob in Greendale a chance to join in, too. Bob, hello. Thank you for calling.
Hello. My question is this. I don't have an energy-efficient home, and I was wondering, I noticed the temperature in the attic. I have a single-story home. It's much warmer because of the fact that as the sun beats on the roof and so on, it heats up that air. Isn't it possible to bring air from the attic down to the basement to provide makeup air for furnaces and so on that aren't the energy efficient type that drag air in from the outside?
There are means of doing that, and what I would suggest without seeing your home, you know, and I can't advise it without seeing it, but a concept that you could think about and get some information on is insulating the underside of your roof.
Mm-hmm.
And of course you need to make sure that you're not opening yourself up to, you know, water vapor or anything like that. But just conceptually, you can gather that heat. You know, you can make your attic part of the conditioned space.
Yeah.
And then put an energy recovery ventilator into your home, which will circulate that heat plus all the other air in the house. So it kind of would bring all that air together and potentially cool the attic while you're also heating the first floor.
No.
That's something you might want to look into, is the viability of an energy recovery ventilator or a heat recovery ventilator, depending on your situation. But you could talk to a heating expert about that.
Yeah, that makes some sense. Thanks, Bob. Good luck with that. Appreciate it. Gloria in Platteville, your turn. Hi, Gloria.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to say this is just the best program ever. This is the number one program that you ever, ever have had on.
Oh, my goodness.
I was in El Paso, Texas, and they did a sustainable architect engineering thing for 3 or 4 days for the whole week, and it was just awesome. I'm a climate reality leader, and I was one of the speakers, but I have a question for you. So my question is that we want to build a sunroom. How could we build a sunroom / family room off to the south side of our house that would be sustainable, energy efficient? We already have 44 solar panels. And just a little thing off to the side was saying that in Wisconsin you can get enough sunlight to have a really good energy, lots of energy that's coming through in the sun. So I just wanted to add that. But my question is, what would be some of the steps that I could do to have a sunroom / family room on the south side of the house that I would add on to our house that would be sustainable and energy efficient?
Hmm.
Well, let me ask you this. When you say sunroom, are you talking about one that has a glass roof?
Well, I guess I'm open. Because
if so, I wouldn't necessarily recommend that, because you would lose a lot of your heat. First of all, you're going to lose a lot of heat in the winter out of your roof if you did that. And on top of that, in the summer, you're going to be overheating the room. A good thing to do is, you could have tall walls, and then with the glass, and then construct a canopy, a pergola, size it so you can actually protect the room from overheating in the summer by introducing some shading into it, but then also construct it in such a way that you can gain as much sun as you can in the winter.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't know if that helps, but...
And actually, I had an expert on wind and solar, a solar expert on, who said actually in the wintertime, solar as a means of generating electricity, for example, it's more efficient in the wintertime than it is in the summertime. And now that I've said that, you're probably wondering, well, how can that be? And I can't remember the reasoning for it, but the solar...
It's probably because the air is thinner.
It could be. Some of it has to do with the amount of heat hitting the solar panels in the summer, too, that somehow make them less energy efficient. I can't remember exactly why, but I do know they've done some research on that, and they're actually a little more efficient in the wintertime than they are in the summertime.
Hope so, because we just got a 6.9 kilowatt system installed on our roof, and we're anxious to see how it performs in the winter.
Oh, my goodness
yeah.
me. George in Oshkosh has a question. Hi, George.
Hi. I'm a physicist. I talked to you a few times. I'm amazed that the little attention that is given for the carbon footprints of the stuff. You were just talking about solar panels. Until 2015, there was no scientific paper for what's the footprint of a solar panel. And it's carbon neutral. That means the carbon that you save regarding the carbon that you waste building that panel was neutral only in 2015 when the technology went a little better to do that panel. In Wisconsin, there are never... neutral.
Yeah, well, I think that's changing, though. Verge, maybe you want to comment.
Well, that with sustainable design and construction, there are always some types of trade-offs and changes in definitions. I don't want to say changes, but nuances in definitions. And unfortunately, you know, if we build... When I first got into this so many years ago, I was doing a paper on what the greenest building is, and my husband walked by the kitchen island and he said, well, the greenest building is, you know, the mud huts in Africa or South America, where you're not destroying anything, you're not fabricating anything. And to do homes as we do them right now, there is manufacturing that goes into them. There's manufacturing that goes into the solar panels. Most companies or many companies who are involved in sustainable engineering and sustainable fabrication are all working independently on ways that they can also reduce their carbon footprint in their factories, in their offices. And so George is completely right. There is not complete, pure carbon neutrality on anything right now, but we're working toward that. We're working toward that as quickly as we can. You know, there are various hospitals right now who are, for instance, they are tapping into the methane exhaust from landfills and piping that to their hospitals to heat their hospitals. And there are a lot of cradle-to-cradle, meaning that there's no waste along the way, a lot of cradle-to-cradle ways of dealing with things, energy, et cetera, to keep us from having to fabricate additional things and you know, create that carbon in our atmosphere. But for sustainable design, getting back to Georgia's point about solar panels.
And we're out of time.
but just very quickly, ultimately you want to insulate as well as you can to start with, and then hopefully you won't even need the solar panels.
There you go. Verge, it's been a great pleasure talking with you. I hope you can be back with us again. We have lots more we could cover for sure. Thank you so much.
I'd love to. Thank you, Larry.
Verge Temme, our guest today. And it was a pleasure having her with us and a pleasure having you listening. And I hope you'll stay with us. Lots more in store.